What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we are celebrating a couple milestones for the Rock Spotlight Podcast. First, it is my 50th episode, and I want to thank all my listeners for making the past 2.5 years an amazing ride. Starting a podcast was a very humbling experience because I knew nothing about starting one, let alone leading one. With that being said, I am so glad I decided to follow through because I get to help inspire people in our Rochester community to live and lead healthier lifestyles while also getting the chance to meet some amazing people. The second milestone is today's guest. The one and only Leslie Terzinski is our first guest to be on for a second time. I guess you can say I'm starting a podcast VIP list and she's in the first slot. Today is all about the principles of yoga and how important it is for any sport. We're going to cover so much from stretching to in-season versus off-season yoga training and so much more. So with that, let me introduce our special guest. Leslie's been teaching a prescriptive yoga for athletes approach for over a decade with massive training in yoga, functional movement, anatomy, and exercise physiology. She was one of the top pro cyclists in the world with world championship medals and international stature in aiding a teammate to an Olympic berth during the trials. Also was appointed to prestigious positions on the U.S. Olympic Committee as an athlete rep and featured in a renowned Nike commercial alongside Bo Jackson, Michael Jordan, and other household name global sports figures. So with that, I'd like to welcome my friend Leslie on. What's up, Leslie?
Hey there, great to be back.
VIP list, slot number one.
I love it. What a dubious distinction. Also the 13th episode and now the 50th episode. So it's like the bad luck, good luck numbers. I don't know, but I'm thrilled to be here.
And we're recording this on Friday the 13th. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's a great thing.
We'll roll with it. So let's dive right in. We got a lot to talk about today. We're both talkers too. So this is going to be good. So briefly tell us your story and how you became a professional athlete.
Yeah, so you gave a little bit of the background. Thank you for, again, having me back, and what a thrill to be here, and even as a patient of yours and how much you've helped me just physically and so many others that I've sent to you. So again, it's just great to be here on so many levels connecting with you. I've really been a gifted athlete genetically. I mean, my entire life and everything I've done kind of physically. And then I was afforded incredible opportunity by my circumstances and by my parents even. And so for all of that, I'm incredibly grateful. I was a top national swimmer when I was younger at the national championship level. And then I excelled at triathlons, which brought me to my highest accomplishment in the sport of bike racing. And as you duly noted there, I was given a berth to the U.S. national cycling team and lived at the U.S. Olympic Training Center, where I got incredible exposure to strength training and sports psychology and the idea of stretching and all of these different modalities. And so I was a pro cyclist for many years, racing all around the world, which was phenomenal. And then I kind of segued out of racing, out of competitive life. And as you noted, I sat on the Olympic team the Olympic Committee for many years. And then I worked as a sports journalist and as a sports marketer for many, many years before I moved into kind of the corporate world of marketing.
You're just so talented. I mean, you're a pro athlete, and then you're like a marketing guru. I mean, you help me all the time with my business, so I appreciate that. And I receive those kind words that you said earlier. I'm honored and humbled to be, you know, your doctor and take care of all of your clients and whatnot. So, Yeah, you wear many hats and you're good at all those hats. But I'm just thinking right now about cycling. Cycling is an intense sport. So you were just ramping up your career. And then it looks like you just needed to do a 180 and just almost like bring it back a little bit with yoga. Is that accurate?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, how I got into yoga was when I retired from competitive bike racing, I still stayed in the sport. I still rode a lot. And I was working for a big multi-day race called the Tour du Pont, which was fashioned after the Tour de France. And I lived in Virginia at the time. And I ran a bunch of marathons because, you know, you go from competitive bike racing and training 6 hours a day. And so you got to find something else to do. So I was training for marathons because, you know, why not? And I had qualified for the 100th anniversary of the Boston Marathon, which was just really cool. I was kind of not excelling, but I was doing pretty well in marathons. And a training partner took me to a yoga class. And I immediately was hooked. I really felt the connection in my athlete body to the physical part of it, and then just really the mindfulness and the focus aspects of it. And ironically, when I look back at even my swimming days and dry land exercising, and then in cycling, I was constantly in stretches. I was doing like traditional yoga poses. I didn't even know it. Like I was doing like dancer pose, which is kind of a really big quad stretch. Or I had my legs up the wall for recovery. I was constantly getting my teammates to put their legs up the wall in our hotel rooms. And so I kind of was naturally, I think, just inherently drawn to the yoga practice and even the psychology of it and the mindfulness of it and kind of the intuition that it helps to bring, especially, again, kind of a competitive, drained body, you know, and training and competing.
So there's so many philosophies, techniques out there with yoga. Your practice is more yoga for athletes. So what is yoga for athletes? And what's your goal with yoga for athletes?
Yeah, so what I would say is that, I mean, yoga for athletes still embodies kind of the core principles of yoga. But then there are some very specific nuances and circumstances that we have to consider when we're looking at an athlete's body, an athlete's predilection for pain, or an athlete's mindset. So let me just quickly walk you through kind of the general principles of yoga and then kind of how those apply. I mean, in general, we like to think about yoga as kind of moving from the outer body, from the physical body, more deeply into the inner body. And so that is a perfect way to talk to an athlete about yoga, because athletes are kind of so body dominant, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. so we can kind of Trojan horse the mental side, or the psychological side, or the focusing side, or the mindfulness for an athlete. We can kind of bring those premises through the physical body. I mean, the ultimate goal of yoga in general is the quieting of the mind. And so for an athlete, you know, we're trying to bring the athlete to a place that they derive the mind of a yogi. And again, yoga is much more than just the physical postures, right? I mean, the physical postures are the front door to bring us into that quieting of the mind. And that can come really easily by first being aware and conscious of our breath. So when we talk about yoga for athletes specifically, you know, there are no universal cues. You know, in a general yoga class, you're going to be teaching to, you know, a whole wide range of possible people that are coming in. Whereas with athletes, we really have to kind of take it and drill it into, again, kind of what we know about athletes. So, for example, athletes bring some good traits to a yoga practice. They have knowledge of their bodies. They might have sports-specific strength from their specialization. They definitely have a desire to kind of improve themselves. They're receptive to feedback, and they're ready to work, and they're ready to train. And so those are all good things when you talk about yoga, but yoga is not a competitive sport, right? I mean, yoga is not competitive. In fact, the core principles of yoga kind of bring us back to like a sense of empathy, a sense of compassion. And that's when we kind of talk about this idea of connectedness and kind of this bigger idea of what yoga brings. And so the way I reconcile that is, you know, yoga is non-competitive. And so we bring athletes who are competitive with either with themselves or with other athletes. And we kind of find this place of non-competition on the mat. And so we bring it back to this place of self-compassion or self-awareness. And so that the athlete is generating this kind of bigger sense of themselves. And so probably to boil it down, so I'm being long-winded here, because yes, I like to talk. If I had to give you kind of one notion of yoga for athletes, what I would say about that is that what I try to instill in athletes is that the yoga practice, because it's such a multidimensional tool around the body and the mind and the breath, that it provides a bigger container with which then to look at your training and your competing and your sport. And so it really opens up the possibilities of how you look at your discipline as an athlete, you know, whether it's again in your training, whether it's your nutrition, your quality of sleep, and all the other elements and aspects that are going to make you hit on your own human performance.
Now, who should be doing yoga? I mean, when you say athlete, you know, I might argue that everyone's an athlete, correct? We're just at different levels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way I position my business is I say, you know, yoga for sports or yoga for athletes, even though I have a much bigger, I mean, I work with all elements of the population. Mm-hmm. I mean, who should be doing yoga in general? Absolutely everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question that, you know, I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about the benefits of yoga for athletes or sports performance, but yoga is truly for everybody. I mean, we think of yoga sometimes as kind of the bendy, stretchy pretzel aspects or images of like skinny white women doing yoga. I mean, it just couldn't be anything further than that. It's like an incredibly powerful tool for centering and deepening the consciousness for all bodies, no matter like your, you know, your shape or your age, your size, even your class, physical limitations. I mean, there's chair yoga, there's yoga with people that are paralyzed, there's yoga with people in hospital beds, there's yoga for people in prisons, and you know, I work with injured athletes that are coming out of surgery, and sometimes I'll just do pranayama. We'll just do like the Viloma breath or Kapalabhati, some of these kind of more active breath practices. And it gives an athlete's body and brain something to feel like they can adhere to and kind of coming back to being in their body. So, you know, yoga is anything but cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing, Matt, right now is that in this global pandemic, right, which is just beyond heartbreaking and treacherous in its devastation, like in so many ways, the silver lining is that there's so much more online yoga now, and it's like it's even more accessible. And mm-hmm. So, you know, there's older people in their homes that can't get out of their homes, and they're doing chair yoga. Or, you know, I'm working with a lot of athlete teams, even online. I'm providing, you know, pre-recorded content, or, you know, I'm doing a lot of work in different ways. So everybody should be doing yoga. I mean, from an athlete perspective, I mean, there's just countless numbers of pro athletes and Olympic athletes that are just espousing the virtues of yoga, and coaches and physical therapists and people that work with athlete teams, you know, all the way down again to recreational athletes that are just looking to maximize and optimize their own particular goals and human performance.
Okay, so the remainder of the podcast, let's focus on yoga and sport. So when we're talking about yoga for athletes, is it more of like a functional yoga? Like they talk about functional medicine, functional nutrition. Are we talking functional yoga?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great way to put it. You know, it's not aesthetic yoga. I mean, even though at the end of the day, the type of yoga that I teach a very prescriptive type of yoga. I'm all about alignment and precision, because I really believe that out of sound structure comes good energy. And out of the analysis of structure in the body, people can analyze where the imbalances are. So of course, sports are going to bring an imbalance. Like if you're a quarterback and you're, you know, you're right-handed and you're constantly throwing with the right hand, or, you know, whatever your sport is, if you're a cyclist and you're hunched over, the top tube of the bike. You know, every sport brings its own imbalances. So, but you're absolutely right, Matt. It's about functional movement, right? So I like to think of it about kind of studying imbalances and improving the biomechanics and then even energy conservation, right? So that we're more efficient in our body's movement. And then it's really about movement quality. So it isn't about just, you know, getting out there and doing your sport. It's about, you know, looking at the quality of your movement. And then, you know, really looking at how to access parts of your body that maybe you don't currently or naturally have. Again, whether you're naturally tight or maybe you're naturally hypermobile, on either ends of those two spectrums could actually be impacting your ability to, you know, be even better at your sport. So I actually like to use the terminology elevate your edge. And that's what yoga is doing. So the bigger container of yoga for athletes is helping people to kind of look at creating balance and developing areas that they don't think they can be strong or flexible, and kind of changing this whole notion of like a three-dimensional aspect of their sport, both from a strength perspective and from a flexibility perspective.
So let's talk about football here. So I played college football. I wish we had yoga. I think they have it now at St. John Fisher. But like in season versus out of season. So what do you recommend for like a football team in season versus out of season?
Yeah. So what I would say is in season, you know, when they're specializing in their games, you know, so there's kind of a ramp up to the season, you know, you're training hard. Of course, you're in the gym and you're lifting and your strength training. And all of that is very specialized for your sport. So when you're in season with games, then the yoga practice is very restorative. It's about bringing back the circulation to tissue in the body, you know, muscle repair and blood flow, and kind of recovering the musculature that's being worked so hard in training and in games. And then in the off season, the critical nature of that is to bring balance to the body. So it would be like stretching in the opposite direction, in the opposite way that your sport, you know, like when I work with field hockey players who are, you know, again, hunched over all the time, or like squash players who are lunging hard and moving in a certain way, or again, football players, to your point. And I work with a linebacker versus different than a quarterback because of the, mm-hmm. the specific needs of that particular, you know, position. And so in the off season, it should be a much more dynamic, aerobic, you know, isometric toning, and challenging. The other piece of it in the off season is that we work a lot on proprioception. So we work a lot on analyzing, like, what is the left foot doing in this pose in relationship to the right hand? So yoga for athletes, we use a lot of props. We use blocks and chairs even, and the wall and straps, not only because athletes tend to be tight maybe in certain body parts, and so the props are almost like technology. They give us access to places that we may not have access to, but they also will bring a proprioceptive awareness. I might have you sit at the wall and put the block between your shoulders at the wall so that you can get some proprioception in the shoulder blades. So that, again, as athletes are now in our lives, because we're so hunched over using our devices, it's going to give you that proprioceptive awareness of how to bring your shoulders back and down and open up the chest. So, like, for example, when the shoulders are forward, we're losing about 30% of our lung capacity just by having that forward head position and that kind of rolled shoulders forward.
Wow, so I like that.
Yeah. So
now I think a common misconception, though, is props show your weaknesses, especially with athletes. You hear, we need props, I'm weak, I'm inflexible. It's like, but no, like, props are a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, again, yoga for athletes, we use a lot of props. I mean, and again, you know, different people have different abilities in different places to maintain or to gain a certain sense of alignment. So the propping is really critical. And that's where the idea of ego really has to be left outside. And, And, you know, most athletes come into yoga anymore, you know, they do get it. I mean, another word that I really use with athletes, Matt, is that they have to reimagine the idea of yoga and what yoga is. And then they kind of have to use yoga to reimagine themselves and kind of their idea of their physicality. And what I'll tell you is that, you know, if an athlete comes to a yoga training with me and they've never done yoga before, I mean, by the end of that session, they're hooked. And I usually tell people it takes up to 3 times for the body and the brain to really start to understand. And again, for athletes, because they can be competitive and they can bring their ego to the mat, they have to kind of have this mind shift. You know, they have to kind of they have to gain some patience, and they have to kind of shift their goal orientation a little differently. So they're learning so much about themselves. And that's just kind of a general premise about the yoga practice too, is that this idea of self-study. And I can't tell you the success stories of athletes, again, at all levels coming off of a yoga mat. And that's anywhere from like 20-minute practice up to an hour and a half. You know, there's different volume and intensity and duration of a yoga practice that all of it can be, you know, super beneficial.
Now, what about stretching? Let's talk about stretching. What is the research showing and telling us about stretching? Is it static? Is it dynamic? Is it a combination of both?
Yeah, so I would say that both, I mean, really kind of at specific times. I mean, there's many, many variables to consider. I mean, in its simplest form, you know, you think about dynamic stretching or movement kind of in a way to warm up the body and kind of connect the body and the breath and the mind in kind of a focused way. So, you know, we in general terms, we think about dynamic stretching or dynamic movement pre-workout and then more static stretching post-workout. So, you know, there's even more data and research that's showing how foam rolling is a dynamic warm-up, and it's a really good warm-up. And all that's doing is just hydrating the tissue. It's just bringing, nutrition and hydration into, you know, the muscles and the connective tissue and the soft tissue. And that brings awareness through movement. It kind of, again, starts to get you concentrating and focused on the body. And then, you know, there's a supposition that stretching is harmful to performance. And that's led to the removal of static stretching pre-workout or when you're warming up. However, what I'll tell you, Matt, is that research is not clear on that. That remains really unclear. And I'm a huge proponent I'm really into exercise research and physiology. I do a lot of digging. And static stretching is still really under a lot of scrutiny and question around the duration. So how long should we hold a static stretch? When should we do it? What the level of intensity should be? Mm-hmm. And then the other piece of it is that we look at stretching, both dynamic, even isometric stretching, and then static stretching. And we can start to segment the population based on like a highly performed trained athlete, like at a really high level, like someone who's training in their sport several hours a day versus someone who maybe is not quite as intense, right? Who may still be an athlete, absolutely. But, you know, a trained athlete versus, you know, maybe a more of a weekend or a recreational athlete. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's still kind of this general idea of dynamic movement and as a warm-up. And then we have isometric, which is really, really important piece of it. I mean, the perfect blend would be to do a little bit of all of it, even pre-workout. So you'd have a little bit of dynamic movement and dynamic movement with the breath. You'd have a little bit of isometric, like plank pose or a held bridge pose, or even some of our yoga poses like a warrior two, where we're holding the poses, which are getting a little more of a combination of strength and stretch. And then a static stretch where we hold a pose for 30 seconds to a minute. And let me make one more quick point, which there's a ton of new muscle research coming out, which is really analyzing the duration of a stretch. So should we hold a stretch for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 2 minutes? And the jury is still out. You know, when we look at research, we have to look for a minimum of 30 seconds. That's like the minimum. And they're saying even over a 1 minute static stretch is showing even better performance results. And so anything under a 30 second static stretch is really a waste of time.
Interesting. What about reciprocal inhibition? I know we touched on that last week. Can you shed some light on that? What is it? Is it effective?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the deal. You know, again, I follow some of the top exercise science researchers, and you know, I have all these different resources that I look at, and there is some new research, and I say new because, you know, research is constantly either refuting prior research or corroborating those results. So, you know, this idea of reciprocal inhibition would be like, if I want to stretch my hamstrings, I should contract the quadriceps so that the opposite side of the body and whatever we're trying to derive the benefit, that we, you know, that we deploy some activation there. So there's some recent research that's showing that reciprocal inhibition is not effective, that it is not actually, that the spindle of the muscle is not being impacted in the hamstring based on the contraction of the quadriceps. Now, there's still a whole body of research out there and a lot of people, you know, at a PhD level and a medical level that have been doing research that are, you know, highly trained yoga teachers that still firmly believe in the idea and notion of reciprocal inhibition, including a lot of top doctors and people that work with, you know, pro teams all over the world. And I like to talk about pro teams only because they, of course, have the resources in both budget and, knowledge base and expertise. In fact, there's a lot of research being done with pro athletes. And what's cool, Matt, is that they're using like MRI technology and MRI machines with pro athletes to look at things like reciprocal inhibition, or they're looking at, they put stim and other things right into the muscle. So, you know, we talk about research with MRI machines, they're looking at things like fascia, kind of like the last frontier, where they're looking at like the impact of foam rolling and stretching on fascia specifically, and using like an MRI machine before and after a very specific methodology with athletes of different ages and different sports.
That's science for you. And that's why I love science. You got to take it with a grain of salt. It's just constantly changing. It's constantly evolving. That's why I love your work. I know that you're very evidence-based. And we're hungry, right? We're driven to keep being better and helping our clients. And there's a lot of genetic variation with it too, right? Like static stretching might be better for you than me. So you got to play around with things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're nailing it. There's like an art and a science to it. I mean, absolutely being evidence-based and continually looking at the exercise science out there. But at the end of the day, Matt, everybody, again, at the highest level of performance down to your own personal goals, it's something called bio-individual. And that's going to come, you know, when you treat people on the table, you know, you're going to get their history and you're going to look at kind of a rubric of some general premises, but then you have to take the specific person in front of you. You're working with that person. And so there's, and then that's the art to it. So there's kind of this blend of art and science that makes it so interesting and so cool. And, you know, I like to talk about the yoga practice as kind of a fingerprint. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to make it what's specific to the individual. And that can be challenging when you have 30 or 40 people out in front of you, whether it's a sports team or a class, or, you know, you have a lot of people coming to a training. I do some work where I have pre-recorded stuff that goes out, you know, to a lot of people. And so, you know, you have to make some assumptions and kind of make some, you know, some general premises. But, you know, at the end of the day, there is that genetic predisposition to it. And we're constantly learning, you know, to your point. And as athletes and just as people wanting, you know, when I talk about human performance, people are like, oh, well, I'm not an athlete, so that doesn't apply to me. No, it's about wanting to be the best you can be as long as you can, you know, well into your, you know, your later life and, you know, old age. trying to fight any kind of, neural or muscular or skeletal pain or issue. And so that's really what it is about at the end of the day.
So my takeaway with stretching is the best would be a combination of the three, but just to do something, just start somewhere, start moving your body, start stretching, because you're going to impact the lymphatic system, circulatory system, probably immune system, nervous system. So something is better than nothing. Okay. I want to dive into athletes now with some challenges with our athletes. So when we think of athletes, we think of strong, we think of flexible, we think of very driven. But as a whole, what do you see as like the biggest weaknesses from a yoga standpoint with athletes?
Yeah, I mean, kind of what I talked about earlier, I mean, in some ways, athletes, a lot of people think yoga is easy, right? It's anything but. But at the end of the day, athletes are used to being good at their sport. They're used to being good at, they've come from a level of training and discipline. And so, a lot of people find that they don't feel good or that they can't perform certain poses. And so again, they look around and they see others, even if it's just a hamstring stretch on your back or a warrior stretch or something, and they can't achieve the same level of geometry or joint angles that as other people. And so then they get frustrated and they want to leave, right? They don't want to continue practicing because their ego has gotten involved. So it's about being patient with their bodies and again learning about their bodies, kind of as I spoke to earlier. Athletes are also used to being on a timeline, and so in the yoga practice and kind of in this idea of mobility, you can't be on a timeline, and it's going to come kind of at your discipline, right? I mean, the bottom line is this is an idea of yoga training. And when I talk to athletes, this has to be part of your modality, like weekly, like you should be on your yoga mat or thinking about these qualities of mobility and movement quality 2 to 3 times a week. And that's really what it is. It's a part of your training. And then I like to say to athletes that the soft work is the hard work, because they consider this like the soft work, and they're used to pushing. I mean, athletes are used to being in pain and they're used to pushing themselves to the edge. And so this is a different kind of edge. This is a reimagined athlete, right? And that's what this brings me back to this idea of creating a bigger container with which you're going to pursue your sport and kind of opening up your mind to different ways to feel about your body. And people really get it. And I mean, when I talk biomechanics and that, with athletes, athletes tend to have bad biomechanics and they learn to overcome those biomechanics. And so they have a kind of these suboptimal movement patterns. And so all of that really resonates with athletes and with coaches and with trainers, because they can see the benefits actually really quickly. They can feel the benefits. So that coupled with active recovery and muscle repair, improving blood flow, and just feeling better. And then, sorry, I'm being so long-winded, but the other piece of it, Matt, is that off the mat, athletes feel better when they do yoga. They sleep better and they move better and they're breathing better, right? I mean, we haven't even really touched on the role of the breath and how critical the breath is. And to your point, the bottom line is just move and stretch. And the byproduct of that is that the athletes are tapping into their breath on a much bigger level. We tend to underutilize the lungs by about 30%. And so think about how that would apply to your sport. If your breath is choppy and if you're stressed and you're not getting a full inhale and you're not optimizing your exhale, that's absolutely going to impair your performance. And so just the physiology of the breath and how much yoga focuses on the breathing and breath quality makes a huge, huge difference in how that translates to your sport.
So I've really been into the lymphatic system recently. So we know that we move our lymph, and our lymph is like the sewage system of the body. So it helps to filter out and clean out the blood to bring in healthy blood for healing. And we know that blood carries oxygen, so really important. We move our lymph though through human movement. So just going for a walk, doing jumping jacks, doing yoga, working out, but also through diaphragmatic breathing. So I want to pick your brain a little bit on diaphragmatic breathing. What do you recommend for really impacting the diaphragm and the belly to help to push our lymph throughout the body?
Yeah, I mean, geez, great question. I mean, first of all, before we get into diaphragmatic breathing, what I'll tell you is that, as you know, the lymphatic system is only works through muscle contraction. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have to move the body in order to really optimize the lymphatic system. And so there's so much immune benefit and immune system benefit to the yoga practice. And what's so cool, again, Matt, is as a yoga teacher, I'm not just talking about anecdotal feedback on this. This is being corroborated by huge clinical trials and research out there that are showing the efficacy of yoga in the immune system and how it's impacting the lymphatic system. So absolutely, in a good yoga class, there's a ton of discussion about softening the abdomen and softening around the diaphragmatic band. And so what that does is a two-part process. The first is that we're bringing attention to the abdomen and to the belly, where a lot of times we don't even have a consciousness around that. And if we do, we think about it sometimes like, oh, in my swimsuit, I'm going to pull my belly in. Or we're in a culture that really optimizes this idea of a flat stomach. And at the end of the day, that's actually impairing our breath. It's kind of curtailing the body's natural ability to find this kind of bigger, broader, rounder breath. So the diaphragm is the primary breathing apparatus. The diaphragm is what triggers the body to start the inhale, right? And so the diaphragm is actually elongates. The diaphragm has to move down, has to pull down, and it creates negative space. And that's what then starts to fill the lungs on the inhale. And so in the yoga practice, we simply start to bring some attention to the inner structure of the body, to the idea of the abdomen and the impact of the low belly on diaphragmatic breath. And so that in and of itself starts to break some patterns or some closed-mindedness around even thinking about the breath. And then it has this huge impact on helping people to expand their breath, to get deeper in the breath. And so there's a lot of muscle research research that's showing how much yoga can impact the breath, right? And so again, we're going deeper on the inhale, and the primary objective, Matt, in going deeper on the inhale is to then affect and accentuate the exhale. So the exhale is actually the more important side of the breath cycle, which is helping us to relax. It's helping the digestive system. It's helping the restoration. It's helping the parasympathetic nervous system, right? Which is the restorative side of the nervous system. So the breath practice is such an important component here. And again, the diaphragmatic breath, to your point, is really at the end of the day, the most important piece. So a lot of times I talk about internalizing the consciousness in yoga, and that's the benefit again. So that brings kind of this whole conversation back full circle and going from this idea of the outer body and then deeper into the inner body. And again, I'll just close by saying that we underutilize our lungs by about 30%. I mean, we're simply not breathing as deeply as we should be. So there's a lot of muscle research and a lot of performance research that's showing that when we work with athletes on the mat, we're actually increasing inspiration. We're increasing the inhale. And so we're impacting people's ability to broaden the lung capacity, going deeper on the inhale and then going broadly in the exhale.
So if we have a patient or a client, I mean, dealing with ACL repair and they can't do yoga, but they could diaphragmatic breathe, they can really work on their breath. So what's a simple technique that you can give somebody to help to activate the diaphragm and belly, just lying down, recovering from a knee surgery?
Yeah, so great question. I mean, first of all, what I would say is before we even talk about the breath, we have to talk about posture. And so, you know, if you're a recovering athlete and you're coming off of surgery and you're laying in a bed, right, the first thing I do is I get people to either lay flat so that their back is neutral, their spine is neutral, or come to sitting. And even sitting against a wall so that you're trying to find a neutral spine, kind of where the back of the head, the scapula and the hips are in line. So like I like to talk about the back of the head is in line with the tailbone, or the scapula, the shoulder blades are in line with the sacrum. So that's kind of the first piece of it, because if you're all slumped over, that right there is going to really impact the quality of the breath. And then the second piece of it is just to bring your hand to your belly. In fact, your listeners could do it right here. Bring one hand to your low belly and bring the other hand to the chest. And as we start to take an inhale, at the very beginning of the inhale, we should feel the low belly expand. And that's that idea of that belly breath. So that's kind of opening up the container of the torso and kind of the abdominal balloon, if you will, which is going to absolutely impact the body's ability to deepen the inhale. And so you feel the low belly expanding as we start the inhale. And then the second hand is kind of up at the upper chest, and then we bring the breath kind of up into the upper lobes of the lungs. And that's again where we're trying to fill the breath. And then as we exhale, we actually have to start drawing the low belly in slightly. So at the hand on the belly is going to start to feel the low belly tone slightly. And then as the exhale is completing, the upper hand of the shoulders will also, you'll start to feel the body drop, right? You'll feel the breath leaving the body. So the final piece of the answer here, Matt, is that I really encourage people in the most simplistic way to take a counted breath. And so you inhale for maybe the count of four, and it's a very slow count, like one, two, three, four. And at the top of the inhale, there's a slight pause. And then you exhale for at least four, if not five. So that the inhale and the exhale are at least the same duration, or even more importantly, the exhale is a little longer than the inhale was. And so that is the most basic, simplistic, yet incredibly powerful way for a recovering athlete coming out of surgery, or someone who's extremely stressed, or maybe you're getting ready for a big work presentation, or whatever it is. I mean, we have the world is asking a lot of us right now. And simply coming back to your breath in that most simplistic way is a really great start. And then over time, you can add another count to the inhale and another count to the exhale, so that you're kind of monitoring this big round cycle of the breath. And then I'll just finish by saying, Matt, that there's a lot of very specific pranayama that we do in yoga. And these are Sanskrit names, but there's something called the Ujjayi breath, or as I mentioned earlier, the Viloma breath, which is a segmented breath. We break the exhale into three parts, which helps to elongate the exhale. There's something called Bastrika, which is a very sharp exhale, which helps people to really work through the exhale. And it's a very, very energizing and active breath. And so there's something called the Bremeri breath, which is it's a bee buzzing sound.
Vibration.
Which is extremely, yes, the vibration is like, again, they put brain probes on people at Harvard. The Harvard Medical School has done a ton of research on the Ujjayi breath and the Bremeri breath and how phenomenal it is in dropping the dopamine and cortisol. In people, as well as lowering blood pressure and all these other just unbelievable benefits. And so the breath is at the end of the day, like just the mea culpa. I mean, that is the place that that athletes and everyone on the planet who have done some level of yoga talk about the shift there.
I feel super zenned out right now. I feel that parasympathetic tone. I feel warmer. So thank you.
You're so welcome.
So we got a couple more questions here because we got to wrap up here. But my final question before we dive into your business a little bit, what are you diving into recently with research and anatomy?
Yeah, so I mean, there's so much that I follow. I mean, there's a really cool woman. She's a yoga teacher. She's also a biomechanic specialist and a researcher. Her name is Jules Mitchell, and she's written a couple of books. I also follow a colleague of mine, and I'm looking to possibly do some really interesting stuff with her. She's also a PhD. Her name is Stacy Sims. Her positioning is that women are not small men. I talked about her in my first podcast with you about menopause, but she's doing all this research on women's physiology.
Which, if you missed that one, go back. Episode 13. I forget what it was titled. The Pre- and Post-Menopausal Athlete, I believe. Awesome episode.
Yeah, yeah. So she's doing some amazing stuff. I look at the government site, the National Institute of Health, and specifically the National Center of Biotechnical Information, the NCBI. I just pour over and kind of devour. They have a ton of research on sports biomechanics, as does the American College of Sports Medicine. I mean, these are just some of my kind of go-to places where I want to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening specifically with athletes. And there's a lot of work being done by something called applied physiology. And so again, my look at it is kind of anatomy in action. I try to look at anatomy and biomechanics and even kinesiology, and then how that applies over into the idea of yoga, you know, asana. I mean, you know, even hard yoga poses or restorative poses. So there's just a ton of research being done. Again, I talked a little bit about fascia and things that are being done. You know, the IT band, which has gotten such a bad reputation. There's continued work to be done on analyzing, you know, the role of the iliotibial band and how that impacts injury. You know, there's just a ton of research that's being done, you know, just across the board on different things. Again, like we talked about with the breath. And other pieces. And so I'm just constantly looking. But what I will tell you, Matt, is that you always, like I said, have to look back at the methodology and, you know, kind of critically analyze who's doing the research and how it's being done. And then I personally do research on myself, and I'm constantly looking at different muscle groups. I try to aggregate what I see in my clients. I'm putting a lot of focus lately on the tensor fascia lata, which kind of brings the IT band up to the hip. And it's kind of a small muscle, but it's so incredibly important. I find with athletes who are having hip issue we're doing some foam rolling and some very pointed and surgical stretching. And then I'm doing a ton of work with the adductors. You know, there's been so much talk about the psoas and the hamstrings and the quads, but the adductors are kind of this forgotten body part. So the adductor group of five muscles, I find when I can really get into people's adductors in both restorative and very active ways, it's creating a whole new world for people in their sports and just in their general functional movement.
Amen to that. Adductors are neglected and a very powerful group of muscles. That's awesome. So let's talk about your business now. So anything exciting planned for Tune Yoga in 2021?
Yeah, OMG. I mean, just so much good stuff. I mean, I'm really excited about 2021. I have some just very clear focus areas. I mean, as mentioned through this whole podcast, I focus a lot on athletes, and I'm launching a whole new program for athletes in kind of a very specific series. I'm also excited, Matt. I've been invited to be a lecturer specifically on anatomy and then how that anatomy applies to yoga postures and yoga teacher training. So I'm kind of becoming more of a teacher to the teachers, and I'm going to be doing more content on that. And some of that content even parlays over just to really serious students. I mean, when I went to teacher training, I didn't think I would teach yoga. And then I started seeing this crazy adherence to the physical body in my sport. And even though I found that, you know, early on in my yoga practice, it was so easy for me to articulate that to people. And so I'd be on a bike ride and I'd sort of talk to people about, you know, the yoga practice, and someone said, oh, you should, you know, teach a class. And boom, you know, my first class was sold out and there was a waiting list to join. And I realized, wow, you know, I really have something here. So with the benefit of online and Zoom, I'm doing a ton of online teaching. And the cool thing about that, Matt, is that now I have students from all over the country that are joining every weekend. I've reconnected with some Olympic cyclists and some pro teams that I'd kind of lost contact with. So all of a sudden, you know, my world here in upstate New York, and I've done some work with, you know, regional athletes and national athletes before, but there's so much stuff coming down the pike. I'm really, really excited about announcing some new programming moving forward. And then I do a ton of private work, and that will continue. And I'm finding that's still really impactful, even on Zoom. And people still find huge benefit and really having to take the verbal cues and really listen And then they also have the recordings. And so the cool thing about Zoom is that my clients are then have a recording of themselves, and they can go back and look at themselves and really see how the verbal cues have translated into their body. So lots going on. I'm super excited about 2021 and kind of all that's happening.
I think we all are. Yeah, we're ready for a new year. So how can listeners connect with you online and get more information on your business and or make an appointment with you?
Yeah, so the simplest way is just to go to Tune Yoga, kind of like, you know, whistling a tune or like a song, Tune, TuneYoga, oneword.com. And that's just a super easy way to get in touch with me. And right now I'm booking a ton of private clients into first quarter of next year. I'm selling a ton of gift certificates because the gift of health and wellness is by far the best thing you can give anybody, including yourself. And that's really the bottom line. And then, you know, the one thing I just wanted to mention, that the other cool thing I'm doing is that I'm creating kind of a nonprofit. I'm really helping young yoga teachers, particularly those with a diverse background who may not have opportunity. I'm trying to help people find their own niche in yoga teaching and helping some people to build their business so that instead of just having an assistant come with me when I'm working with athletes or with teams, I'm actually helping some people to launch their business and to find a niche. I mean, that's what was so cool for me is that I found a niche in yoga, working with athletes and human performance. And so that's a really exciting piece of what I'm also doing in 2021 is just helping to mentor and help new teachers find their path.
Well, thank you so much, Leslie. I mean, you're on fire. I mean, you're just doing so much for this community, so much awesome work. You're helping so many people. So I can't thank you enough for your time today and sharing your passion with everybody. So thanks again.
Well, thank you, Matt. And thanks for keeping me healthy and on 2 feet. And I'm just the Energizer Bunny after I come see you and just eradicate any pain so that I can just keep moving on. So thank you.
You're welcome. We help each other. Thanks for listening to today's episode, guys. I hope you gained a lot of value from what Leslie shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me, go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com, read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.